TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Welcome in, Raised by Wolves. On the day that fake basketball begins in Minnesota, Manny Hill.
Fake basketball.
Fake basketball is here. The Minnesota Timberwolves taking on the Phoenix Suns, the preseason opener that's not televised tonight.
I'm
in Phoenix,
kind of disappointed
9:00.
By that. I know it's just preseason, but I do want to get like a glimpse of this team. And it's not, obviously, it's the games don't mean anything. They don't count in the standings, obviously. It's preseason, so we're not going to see everything that we'll see over the course of an 82-game season, but I want to see some basketball.
Yeah,
it's been too long.
I want to
see some basketball.
And if I had to guess, if you try really hard, you can find a way to watch the game tonight. I don't know where. I'm not going to give away secrets, and NBA Reddit streams are gone. But if you try really hard, I bet you can find a way to watch the Wolves tonight.
I'll do some digging tonight. I'll do some investigating.
I'm going to have to do some investigating. And kind of excited for it. Not going to lie. I'm kind of excited to do some investigating to see which stream I can find of the Minnesota Timberwolves and Phoenix Suns on October 8th for fake basketball. But what I do want to talk about today is I want to dive into some of the things that we are curious about heading into this preseason, or things that we can actually find out, because we're not going to ever find out how good a team is in the preseason. Like, that's just, it's not plausible in any sport. I mean, in the NFL, you can go 0-4 in the preseason and then win the Super Bowl. I don't think anyone has ever remembered any outcome ever of a Major League Baseball spring training game, because it just does not matter. In preseason basketball is much of the same. But there are things that we can learn. While the outcomes don't matter, the games aren't necessarily meaningless. The final score is meaningless, but I don't know that the game itself is entirely without meaning.
Sure.
So some of the things that I'm – the first thing, or the thing I think I'm most curious about, most eager to learn, is how is Jarrett Culver going to look on an NBA floor playing at an NBA speed? Because while the step from the preseason to the regular season is another step, I think the bigger step is from college basketball to any form of NBA basketball at all. And Jarrett Culver will be doing that tonight and in a few more games throughout the course of the preseason. This is the thing that I think I'm most interested in trying to learn during the preseason.
He's going to be going up against grown men.
Yes.
For the first time. I mean, he had a really nice college career, and Texas Tech had a great run to get to the national championship game that we saw right here in Minneapolis.
Only
back
two
in,
Texas
back in
Tech
April.
Games I ever watched.
But Jared's going to get his first glimpse of grown men basketball, and albeit it's going to be preseason, but it's going to be at least a nice little setup before he actually gets his actual rookie season started. He's going to face the big boys now. It's going to be time to really get a good look at him.
Yeah, and I'm curious how his shooting is going to look. I'm curious how his vision is going to look. And Ryan Saunders during training camp had talked about how his vision was something that was really impressive, that he was making plays that you would expect a guy like Ryan referenced Jeff Teague to make.
Mm-hmm.
But they're plays that you don't necessarily expect a rookie to make in his first, I don't know, handful of training camp practices. So that's one of the things I'll be really curious to see, how he starts to fit in as a passer. Because if long-term, maybe not have him be the point guard, but have him be a very viable secondary playmaker, that could change the trajectory of what the Wolves can be. And, I mean, anytime you trade up for a guy in the lottery at number six, if he hits, it's going to change your trajectory. That's how it works in the NBA. And the Wolves need Culver to be that type of guy if they're going to get anywhere near where this franchise has aspirations of going. So getting our first look at him, I think, is something I'm really excited to see what he's going to be able to do defensively and who he's going to guard. I'm curious where he's going to slide into the preseason rotation. I'm also curious how Ryan's going to really treat the preseason in terms of minute allotment. Do all 20 guys that are on the preseason roster actually play in the games? How many minutes is Carl getting? Is the second half just going to be guys that are going to spend time in Iowa? That's another question of mine. But Jarrett Culver and just where he slides into everything here is the one I'm most curious about off the rip.
How much playmaking responsibility do you think we'll see them give him?
Right away?
Right away, yeah.
I think they want to be cautious with him right away because the toughest position to adapt to, in my opinion, in the NBA is point guard. It is the toughest transition because you not only have to know everything about yourself, you have to know where everyone else is supposed to be. It's like going from college to the NFL as a quarterback. Yep. Now, you might not be quite that important because quarterback is probably the most important position in sports. But it's really important to be able to get the team into an offense, to dictate your offensive strategy, to guard another team's lead ball handlers, a very difficult thing to do, especially for young guys. So I don't know how much of a responsibility they're going to give him there right away. I think if he proves that he can do and handle some point guard responsibilities, we see that we see an uptick in that later in the season. But I would be very, very surprised if he's ever on the floor as the lead ball handler for the first couple of months. Now, maybe you see it in short spurts later in the season. And someone on Twitter asked me, is a viable lineup Culver, Wiggins, Okogie, Covington, Towns? Right away, I don't think so.
Right.
But if that comes into play in like March for a short spurt, that could be a dominant lineup defensively if Culver can prove that he can play point guard. And if he can give them some outside shooting too, that becomes a really fun, dangerous lineup.
You mentioned the defense, too. That's another thing that I'm curious about to see with him because he came from a program. Texas Tech was one of the best defensive teams, if not the best defensive team in college basketball last year.
Yeah.
Obviously, you get to the NBA, it's a different beast on that end of the floor. But I think him coming from a sort of a, for lack of a better term, defensive first culture at Texas Tech, I think can help him. But I'm curious as to see how they'll use him defensively and what sort of responsibilities they'll give him and how he'll look in those defensive responsibilities early on.
Yeah, I'm really curious what the defensive system as a whole is going to look like. I think we're going to see more switching than we saw previously in past years here.
That'll be intriguing.
I'm curious what Carl's role defensively is going to be. I'm curious what Carl's role offensively is going to be. That's probably the thing I'm second most curious about is because all offseason, we heard about how this team's going to play faster and how they're going to look different offensively. They're going to shoot threes. They're going to try and eliminate bad, inefficient shots from the floor. But I'm curious where Carl fits in there. Obviously, he's going to be the focal point and the centerpiece of this offense, as he should be. He's one of the 15 most talented basketball players in the world. But where is he going to be stationed? How is he going to adjust to where he's positioned on the floor at different times? What's his distributing ability going to look like this year? How many threes is he going to attempt a game? I have a ton of questions about that. And a lot of those won't be able to be answered until we get into real games and we start to see some more interesting things, less vanilla things than I think we'll see tonight. But I'm fascinated to see how that's going to go.
Do you think we'll see more? Because I think sometimes when people think about, you know, teams playing faster, they automatically think, okay, they're going to want to run more. They'll get a defensive stop and they're going to want to get out on the break more. But I tend to think it's more about if a team's playing faster, the ball movement is faster. They're not letting the shot clock wind down to 2 seconds before the shot goes up. I have to think that we're going to see a lot more of that, even with Carl sort of being the focal point of the offense.
Sure, and I think that a lot of people define pace as in terms of the NBA in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like pace to the Houston Rockets is going to be have a different meaning than pace to the Golden State Warriors.
Sure.
Like it just has a different meaning.
Yep.
And I think when Ryan was asked about this last year, he said that their pace for them is getting into the offense quicker. It's getting the ball across half court with 22 seconds or more on the shot clock.
Yeah.
That's what pace is to them. And I'm curious if that definition has changed because there's an entirely new staff other than Ryan. There are no other holdovers to my knowledge on the staff.
Right.
There's a new front office other than Scott Layden, and I don't know how involved he's going to be in things like this.
Mm-hmm.
What is pace for them going to be?
Yeah, well, I mean, in 2.5 years with Tom Thibodeau, I mean, and I guess more so in the second year and into the third year, Jeff Teague, so how many times did we see Jeff Teague just walking the ball up the floor?
Mm-hmm.
And by the time he gets across the timeline, there's 17 seconds left on the shot clock.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's like, okay, well, whatever they're going to do, they need to get into it right away because there's not a lot of time here.
And
they just wasted 6 seconds.
They make three passes, and you're down to four on the shot clock.
Right.
And that's your possession. I think that we'll see much less, if any, of that this year. I would be very surprised. Get the ball up the floor. Yes, I think that this team's going to want to move, and with that, it's going to they're going to have to figure out the best way to prevent turnovers too. I'm also there are a lot of things about this team I'm trying to figure out, like who the third point guard option is going to be off the rip, because I don't know what they're going to want to give to Jarrett Culver in that aspect. Is it going to be Wiggins? You've got Jeff Teague and Shabazz Napier, but those are the really only two NBA point guards you have right now on the roster. I mean, yeah, Jalen Noel is there, but we don't know what he can do as of right now. We don't know what he's going to be. We have no idea, really.
Yeah, I mean, and Wiggins is going to be really fascinating because, I mean, we know the history there. It is what it is. The contract is what it is. But, I mean, how he's going to be used, where they're going to, you know, certain spots on the floor where they're going to keep him at, certain spots on the floor where they're not going to have him at because he's just not efficient there. I mean, how they use him, too, is really going to be curious. How, you know, how they find ways to get him to attack the basket more. We've talked about him needing to get to the free throw line more and be more aggressive in getting into the paint. You know, how they find ways to do that with him, whether it's him having the ball on the outside and trying to penetrate and trying to beat somebody off the dribble, which isn't necessarily a strength of his, but also off the ball, how he moves off the ball. If Carl has the ball somewhere, wherever on the floor, if another point guard has it on the floor, what is Andrew Wiggins doing? Is he stationary in the corner where maybe that's where he can hit threes and things like that? Or is he moving around on the floor and cutting and trying to get to the basket and things like that?
So I do think the one thing that he'll be able to be successful at, he is really good when he cuts to the basket. He's really, really good at that. He just doesn't do it enough. He doesn't do it at the frequency that he needs to do it for it to be a true positive form. I also think that he's going to have a really good year on catch and shoot threes. He shot 36, almost 36.5% catch and shoot threes last season. I think that that's a number that can improve, and I think that he's going to have a lot more of those attempts, and I think that those are both going to be good things for the Wolves.
That'd be good. That'd be ideal. I mean, they just have to find a way to make him as efficient as they possibly can. I mean, he's not going to be the star that...
I also think he will get to the free throw line quite a bit. Yeah. I think that he's going to... I'm a little hesitant to say, without being bold, I'm a little hesitant to say set a career high in free throw attempts. But I think that the possibility exists for it.
What is his career high?
I believe he attempted 7 per game his second year.
Okay, yeah, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, it was one of my bold predictions. Without getting... I don't want to get too bold. But I think that that's a very real possibility.
So you think it will be more off the ball, cutting to the basket, things like that, to get him to the free throw line more?
Yeah, I think that's just him trying to
beat somebody off the dribble?
Yeah, I think that he's going to be cutting to the basket more. I think that this offense is going to emphasize ball movement and getting open. And I think Andrew's good at those things when he's motivated. And I think for what it's worth, I think he'll be motivated.
Jake Lehman is another one that's really fascinating to me, too. I mean, he's not going to turn into a superstar or anything like that, but obviously we've talked several times about them investing a 3-year contract into him, so there's a plan in place for him in what they hope he can be and what they hope he can turn into. And I'm curious as to how he's going to look, too, in this preseason and how much he plays and how they use him and where he's going to be on the floor and things like that, too.
Yeah, yeah. I'm optimistic about him. From everything I've heard about him from a couple of people around the league, it's that he's ready to not necessarily break out, but he's ready for a larger role here than he had in Portland. And I think that this is a little bit of a low-pressure situation for him, too, where he'll be able to thrive. I think the Wolves are going to do everything in their power to put him in the position to succeed, not just him. I think that they're going to try and do that for everyone in ways that they haven't in terms of this franchise in recent years. But I think Jake Lehman's going to be a big beneficiary of that. And on that note, I figuring out the number 5 starter for this team, because I think we're safe in penciling in the four of the starters. Jeff Teague's going to be a starter. I see zero scenarios other than injury where Jeff Teague is not out there on the court.
So Jeff, Cat,
Carl
Wiggins.
Anthony Towns also going to be a starter. I promise you. He's not coming off the bench. Robert Covington going to start. That's
absolutely
the plan for him. And then Andrew Wiggins, as the season starts, is going to be a starter. If things don't go well, maybe that changes. But to begin the season, Andrew's going to be in the starting lineup. But the number five guy, I don't know. And you could go a number of different directions there. And Dane and I have had this conversation on this podcast, too. It's something that I think could be fluid throughout the year. I think some nights it might be Noah Vonleh. If you're going up against Philadelphia, who's got Joel Embiid and Al Horford on the floor together just to open the game, maybe you have to go Noah Vonleh. Some nights it could be Jake Layman. Some nights it could be Josh Okogie. Some nights it could be Jarrett Culver. I don't know how they're going to, what direction they're going to go there.
How many teams would you have that bigger lineup of, like, if Noah Vonleh is starting at the four or five, so to speak?
The NBA's getting quietly bigger, I think.
Yeah.
Like, they're not – the small ball is still a thing, but now the NBA is trending to, okay, we're going to play small, but we're going to do it big. Like, does that make sense? They're trying to – and Carl is the perfect guy for that, truthfully.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be like, all right, we're going to play small ball, because small ball is essentially having everyone on the floor that can shoot and defend. Now, Carl can't necessarily defend wings as well as one would like, but he can shoot. He can be a small ball five offensively while being 7 feet tall or 6'11", whatever. I'm genuinely curious what his official measurement's going to be.
We still don't know that yet, do we?
No, it's not come out. Nothing has been updated on their site. I checked today, actually, because I was very curious.
I was wondering about that. Yeah.
And Andrew Wiggins is still the same weight he's been for the last 4 years, so that hasn't changed. And so is Carl Towns.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious, as far as how many teams, Philadelphia, maybe Milwaukee, it's Denver, a bigger league. Denver, maybe, with Millsap. And or if they start Grant, they could be a big team. The Clippers aren't very big. The Lakers are big.
Memphis
is big, yeah. Detroit's big.
Yeah. It's more teams than I initially realized. Because Philadelphia immediately comes to mind for obvious reasons.
The biggest team in the history of basketball, basically.
But, now that you think about it and you go through more teams, it's like,
Orlando.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of teams that are trending big now. And the NBA is always going to be cyclical. It's always going to do that. At some point, there will be another revolution. It'll be a small ball basketball again. But I do think it's trending back to being not small ball basketball, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and with Noah Vonleh, too, if you go up against a bigger team, I'm going to use the Sixers here as an example, but they're kind of the extreme example because they're the biggest team and they're probably going to win 60-some games this year.
And Toronto's like that, too.
Yeah.
They're going to probably start Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka at the four and the five. That's pretty big.
But it's like, how do you, with these bigger teams, like Philadelphia, they're the biggest team in the league, at least the biggest starting five, but they're going to spread those guys out. Like you said, we're going to see Al Horford shoot threes.
Yeah.
Joel Embiid's going to shoot threes.
I hope he doesn't. Joel Embiid needs to, he can't make them enough.
Yeah, I agree. He needs to be inside
If you gave Embiid Towns' ability to shoot threes, he would be the best player in basketball.
Yes.
The best player in basketball. And I don't know how close it would be.
He's unbelievable.
I mean, the Knicks could start four power forwards every night if they want. Their roster is nothing but power forwards. Also,
Taj Gibson starts at the three.
Did you see Taj Gibson knock down a three in their preseason game last night?
Did he?
Taj Gibson, I retweeted the clip. And then he did the phone it in celebration. It was amazing. It was incredible.
Well, they had him before you got here, that preseason before you got here, they had him shooting corner. The Wolves had him shooting corner threes.
He started doing it at the beginning of the season. When I first got here, he was still shooting corner threes, and then he stopped.
Yeah.
But for a very, very brief time that I was here, Taj Gibson was shooting corner threes. He's a 21% career three-point shooter, and he celebrated that make. It was from above the wings. It was from above the break. He made an above-the-break three. It was awesome.
Good for him, man. I like Taj. I'll always like Taj. But I guess my question is, with these bigger teams and they're going to be shooting threes, is just how do you, with Noah Vonleh, if he's going to be the four-man there, how do you defend that?
If if who's the foreman? If Noah Vonleh is the foreman? Or say that again. Say that again for me.
If you're going up against, okay, let's say you're going against Philadelphia, which again is a tough matchup anyway.
Yeah.
But if Al Horford is going to be stepping out and shooting threes, Noah Vonleh is in your front court with Cat, like, how do you even guard that?
I think that Carl would have to be on, I don't know.
That's tough. And again, Philadelphia is an extreme example because
I think that despite Vonleh only being 6'9 or whatever he's going to be measured at, I think that he's better suited to guard Embiid than Towns is. But Ben Simmons is kind of the Simmons throws the wrench in everything there because he's a perimeter player that you don't necessarily have to treat like a perimeter player. Right. So you could put
sag off of him because he's not going to hit anything.
Yeah, maybe you put Robert Covington. It depends how they initiate their offense. If they put Ben Simmons in the dunker spot again, like they did all playoffs long in Philadelphia, you put Carl on Ben, and you put Robert Covington on Al Horford. And I know that that's a mismatch because Cov is skinny, but that is a matchup nightmare. Or you put Covington on Simmons if he's going to be the offensive initiator. That's where you put Covington. And then you've got Towns who can follow someone out to the perimeter, I suppose, Horford.
I think you probably put I guess it just depends on what the approach for Philadelphia is going to be. I mean, like you said, if Ben Simmons is going to be the initiator, then you just put your best defender on him, your best wing defender on him, to try and disrupt that as much as possible, to make it as difficult as possible for them to initiate the offense.
Yeah.
But that is going to be a nightmare matchup.
They're going to be a nightmare for a lot of teams, though.
Yeah.
They're going to
be a nightmare for a lot of teams. And that's why, that's why it's probably a bad example for me to ask because it's like they're just going to be tough for everybody. But I'd just be curious as to some of these other teams that are going to try and play big in terms of size, but play a small ball type of game where their big guys are stepping outside. With Noah Vonleh, if you're going to use him, like, how do you defend that? And you're probably right. I mean, you're probably going to have Carl be the guy that's stepping out on the perimeter to try and stop and try and negate some of that stuff.
Yeah, I don't envy coaches that have to game plan against the 76ers this year. I really don't envy that position whatsoever, Manny.
They're going to be fascinating to watch.
Yes, they certainly are going to be fascinating to watch. What else are you interested in, though, for as far as what we're going to see this preseason?
Yeah, I mean, I guess just I'd be curious to find out, and I don't even know if the preseason is a good way to find out, but just how deep this team will actually be. Because there's a lot of guys here, and there's a lot of new players, but it's like, as we go through the preseason, will we get a sense of, like, what this rotation is going to look like? How deep into this bench will Ryan Saunders go? I mean, it's not going to be an 8-man rotation like Tom Thibodeau wanted to do 82 times a year. It's going to be deeper than that, but it's like, okay, if Ryan's going to play 10 guys, who are the 5 guys off the bench going to be? And what roles are they going to have?
I would guess that the rotation's not going to be a super set thing.
Right.
I think most nights it'll be 10. Some nights it might be 11. Mm-hmm. But I think the pieces at the end are subject to change. So if you map this out, we already named the 5 starters, or 4 of the 5 starters. We said Towns, Wiggins, Covington, Teague. They're all in the rotation, so that's 4. I think Jordan Bell's in the rotation. I think Noah Vonleh's in the rotation. So there are your 3 bigs are there. Those are your 3 big guys. So that puts you at 7 guys, right?
Yep. Jake Layman.
Or no, is that... That's 6. 6, Layman's 7.
Okay.
Okogie's in the rotation, that's 8.
Yep.
Culver's in the rotation, that's 9. Shabazz Napier has to be in the rotation, that's 10.
He's a second point guard, yeah. Outside of that,
I don't think Gorgie's in the rotation. I'm curious if Kata Bates-Diop finds his way into the rotation.
And that's tough
Naz Reid has been impressive from what I've heard at camp.
Yeah.
And everything they've said publicly has been positive about Naz. And I don't see him fitting into this rotation right away, but I think he's going to at some point. Saunders spoke highly about Travion Graham the other day. I don't know where he fits in the rotation. This is a team that they're not a contender by any stretch of the imagination, but for a middle-of-the-pack team, they're very deep. They've got a lot of depth where if injuries happen, they're not in a particularly bad spot.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Kata. It's like I had no disrespect to him. I kind of forgot about him.
So didn't listen to the Raised by Wolves episode where I sat down with Kata for 15 minutes and chatted?
I did not get a chance to chat.
Wow, man.
I will.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Leslie story.
There's still time, Danny. But no, I mean, Kata was a guy that showed some signs of being a player and being worth a damn.
I think he's got the outline of a rotation player. And I was, not to toot my own horn here, I was like one of the first people to say that. Like, I was like, I think this kid's an NBA player, like a legitimate NBA player, especially for being number 48 overall. He did some good things. I just don't know where the minutes are for him right now.
Yeah, he's going to have to, he's going to have to scratch and claw,
he's
man.
He's going to have to shoot better to find his way on the floor.
Sure.
He has to shoot better than he did. But that being said, he was one of the most effective cutters on the team last year. And if they're going to an offense that's just going to emphasize cutting to the rim, Kate is a really good guy for that. Like, that's another thing. And also, defensively, if they want to, Gorgie probably fits in defensively as a big guy really well for what they might do.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing, and I don't see where minutes for Gordy are going to come.
But where do you play him? Yeah, wow. It's going to be interesting to see like how all of this plays out. And, you know, you go through the preseason and you give these guys, I mean, everybody's going to play and everybody's going to get a look and everybody's going to get a chance, but it'll be interesting to see like who plays themselves into the rotation and if anybody plays themselves out of it.
Yeah, I will be. I'll be fascinated. I'm also. So the last thing before we get out of here that I'm interested in that I want to touch on is Naz Reid. We just briefly got to him, but he's got a skill set, and this is exactly what Ryan Saunders said. And Ryan wasn't comparing him to Carl because it's foolish to compare an undrafted rookie to a guy that is genuinely an all NBA talent.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got a skill set that matches with Carl's very well. It's like he is. He is a like the dollar store version of Karl Anthony Towns right now, which is a solid thing for an undrafted rookie to be.
Yeah.
So I think that him being in Minnesota, and this is actually what I wrote for tomorrow, is a perfect situation for him because his learning curve is going to change. It won't be as steep because he doesn't have to adjust. He can watch one of the best in the game do what he does and try and mimic his game right after that. And it's not going to produce the same results. It's foolish to think that it would because he's not as talented as Carl is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that because of that, the chances and the likelihood of him being a useful piece in the future for this team is much higher. And I'm curious what he's going to look like going up against real NBA talent in the preseason because he was impressive in summer league.
Yeah. You think best case scenario for him, though, is that he ends up in Iowa to start the year?
I think he'll bounce back. I think that what we will see with, and this is assuming a fully healthy roster, because if one of the big guys gets hurt or two of them get hurt, Naz finds his way in the rotation because of it.
Mm-hmm.
But assuming a fully healthy roster, I think that we see Naz Reid kind of go the Kata Bates-Diop route, where he's going to be with the Wolves for a while, then he's going to be in Iowa for a while, then he might bounce back and forth. But I think that they're going to want to have him around the player development staff here. But I also think that there's a fine balance between having him with the player development people that you want to help him grow his game versus getting real game action in Iowa, because You can do a lot in practice, but at some point you have to be able to put guys into a much more competitive environment, and the G League is what the G League is. But the Wolves have said that they're going to treat the G League in a much different way now than they ever have in the past. I think Naz Reid will be a perfect test case for that.
Yeah, I mean, and you go through the course of a season and injuries happen, and no team ever goes through a full season without having to deal with some sort of injury or some guy, whoever it may be, having to miss time.
Yep.
And
it
so,
always
I mean, that's
happens.
That those, these things a lot of times just sort of play themselves into whatever situation that needs to work out. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But yeah, I'm for a team that, like you said, is not going to be a contender. I mean, there are a lot of intriguing pieces here.
Certainly.
And a lot of question marks to sort of, and I mean this in a good way, question marks that need to be answered. But in a good way, because there are some intriguing pieces here to see.
I mean, if nothing else, the question marks give us stuff to talk about, and I'm never going to be upset about that. So we've got that going for us.
Yes, absolutely. But
fake basketball begins tonight. Manny, I can feel your excitement.
I'm excited. If I'll be more excited if I can find a stream for the game tonight.
I'm really hoping I can find one. Really hoping I can. I'll be disappointed in myself if I can't. But one has to exist.
If you find one, you have to let me know.
I know the game is on the Phoenix Suns website, but I think you have to live in Phoenix to be able to watch it. Like, you have to be geotagged in Phoenix for it to work. But if there's a will, Manny,
we'll find a way.
There's a way.
If there's a will, we will find a way.
So we'll have that to talk about. And they play again on Thursday in Golden State. That one, I believe, is on NBA TV. So okay. Wolves basketball will be watched at some point this week.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
We just don't know if it's going to be tonight or Thursday. But it will be watched. Fake basketball played by the Minnesota Timberwolves this week, folks.
It's going to be fun.
That's Manny Hill. Follow him on Twitter at MannyHill84. I'm Danny Cunningham. Follow me on Twitter at RealDCunningham. This has been Raised by Wolves. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, or the all-new free Score North app available for both Apple and Android devices. We'll be back later this week to talk about more fake basketball.